Hey, John.
Hey.
Do you want to remind everybody about what's coming up in a few months?
You mean the big Mormon Expression live broadcast?
Live recording.
Yeah, what's the difference?
A recording is recorded, a broadcast is broadcasted.
You mean if I'm not there, I can't hear it live?
That's right. You can hear it later, though.
You mean I have to be there?
You have to be there if you want to participate in the live recording.
But what if I ain't got no dough?
It's not very expensive if you ain't got no dough. You just pony up about $5 or $10 and you're in.
Do I have to pay now?
You can pay at the door, but you do need to reserve your tickets in advance.
What happens if I don't reserve my tickets in advance?
There's a possibility that you might show up and there won't be any room for you.
Where's this happening?
It's at the University of Utah in the... What's the room called?
The Crimson Room.
The Crimson Room. So, reserve your tickets, be there or be square.
Hey, what else do we need to talk about? We also need to remind everybody about the essay contest.
It's a great opportunity to have your voice heard on Mormon Expression.
We need recordings of no more than 10 minutes, and your story can be anything to do with Mormonism.
Yep, and you'll have a chance to win $100.
$100.
Ding, ding.
Entries need to be in by July 1st.
We look forward to hearing them.
Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. And tonight, first of all, we're being joined by a couple of our old regulars. First of all, we have George. Hey, George.
Hi, everybody.
And we have the one and only Tom. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And tonight, we're being joined by another one of our good friends who's been helping us out with the conference episodes, the one and only Alpha Omega.
I do.
Now, Alpha, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, golly. I was raised Mormon and haven't sent in the resignation letters yet, but not really believer these days, but still pretty active. I play the organ every week and play the piano in primary. I have a believing wife and several kids who haven't shown any signs of skepticism yet. So I'm happy among the saints, and but still not a believer.
You know, in most congregations, I don't think a lot of Mormons know this, most congregations will hire their organ player. And it's very, very common for an organ player to not be a member of the faith or congregation. So I think you're in good company by being a sort of semi-believer on the bench.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm bringing a non-Mormon tradition to the to the chapel there, making it feel a little more Protestant, huh?
Yeah, and you know, for those of you who follow the podcast, for two sessions running, Alf and I have single-handedly brought down the priesthood session. That's been our domain.
We can't seem to get anybody to join us.
No, you know, all these guys who say they have temple recommends and stuff. I can't get a single one of them to sit through the priesthood session.
Oh, all right. I get enough guilt from my home teacher, so that's it. I need it from it's you.
You know, there's, you know, your standard Catholic who goes to church on Easter and Christmas. I'm the Mormon Expression Mormon who goes to church twice a year at conference. All right, we promised in the other podcast, I believe, that we would bring Alf back to talk about the statistical review of conference. So I'm pausing for all of you on your treadmills to switch to something that will get you through the next a half mile, you know, if that's what you're into.
Yeah, it's time to pay attention. Yeah.
So Alf, now you have been handicapping the conference sessions for quite a while now. Is that right?
Yeah, starting with the 2005 April conference. Back when I was on ZLMB, I put out a a post that I called Handicapping the Statistical Report, where I pretty much figured, well, here's all these numbers that we've been that have been reported in conference for years. We should be able to put these together and see some trends and predict what the next numbers will be. So just before the April 05 conference, I looked at the numbers and made some prognostications based on recent numbers, and then afterwards evaluated how well I did. And I've done that annually ever since, the most recent edition. Pretty quickly I moved over to MAD because ZLMB was dying, and most of the editions have been there.
Yeah, so MAD, of course, is the Mormon Apologetics and Discussion Board. I think it's at mormonapologetics.org. And once a year, you post this, and it's become a popular endeavor over there. You don't even get any negative feedback from it.
Among certain circles there, yeah. I think the geek factor is pretty heavy in that particular thread. But yeah, people who dig numbers and charts really get into it.
So speaking of geek, we will be geeking out on these numbers tonight. I will post all of the charts to which we refer tonight up on the website. So if you want to follow along in your book, you can head over to the Mormon Expression page, and they'll be up when you can hear this, and you can wallow in it.
You can geek out.
As we always do every year.
I want to know if there's been trend charts and control charts and bubble charts put together on these things. That's then we know we're really geeking out, when we apply Six Sigma to this or something like that.
Well, that's basically what we're doing. And
sorry, the geeks only will know what I just said.
I do use the trend function for my baseline prognostication.
All right.
I guess maybe I should outline my methodology a little more concretely before we go on. In that post, I will put in a bar chart that shows, for example, in the category of stakes. And I show, it's a bar chart, I show all the totals of stakes reported in annual conferences from 1973 up through the most recent one. And so that'll show you a kind of an upward curving line. There's bumps and there's smooth sections, but it looks like, you know, steadily upward pretty well.
Now, if you're going back to 1973, are you using only the numbers that are published in the annual conference review, or are you using the Deseret Book Mormon Almanac numbers?
Haven't used those numbers. No, I just go with what's reported over the pulpit, just trying to keep things simple for this exercise. And, you know, this doesn't depend on these numbers being, you know, real or, you know, accurately reflecting anything. They're just based on how the numbers have been reported in the past, what are the next reported numbers likely to be? And so my initial thesis was, well, let's take the most recent 5 years, project those linearly for the next year, and then eyeball that number and figure, is this going to be high, low, or right about on? And then I'll take a guess. And so for this year, for example, the 5 year projection was 2,862 stakes. That was based on the previous 5 years, which ranged from 2,665 to 2,818. I probably shouldn't say actual numbers very much in this podcast, or this is going to get even less interesting than it already is.
Go ahead. We'll just keep going, but as we get to the maybe if you make it to the end, you get a prize.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, with that projection, 2,862, it turns out that this year the actual was 2,865. So the projection was pretty good. And my prediction was that the projection would be high, but it turned out it was low. So, you know, keeping score for that particular category, I was wrong.
So for trend, you're using Excel trending functions, right?
That's correct.
Which is a form of predicting the slope of the curve, basically how the numbers are changing over time.
Well, trend is linear. So if you just have several points, it will take the average slope of those points and then take you one farther out and see what the next point would be on that average slope.
So what we're doing is we're looking at how the church growth is changing and trying to use that to predict what's happening in the next year.
Yep.
Okay, before we get any further into the stuff, let's talk a minute about why this is interesting. But, and I know we have some...
Make the case.
I know we have some listeners out there who are not LDS, surprisingly enough. So let's be clear. The church very carefully measures everything. And if you've ever served as a ward clerk, you'll know that you fill out a weekly statistical report that reports the total membership, and you count how many people are in sacrament meeting, and you give very precise numbers. My point is the church knows exactly what its membership is. It knows exactly how many people are going to church, but it doesn't say. They won't tell us.
But well, they report a number. Yeah. They report that in 2009, let me get back to the spreadsheet, 2009 there were 13,824,854 members.
Well, they report the total membership, but do they report the active membership in relation to the inactive membership?
Well, define that.
I guess the people that are putting their butts in the pews that are being counted in comparison to total membership.
How often? You know, there are no bright lines here. You know, there's people who are there every week. There's people who are there once a month. There are people who are there several times during a lifetime, and everywhere along the continuum.
Right.
And there are people like me who are there practically every week who don't believe a thing. So how meaningful is a membership total that includes atheists?
Well, and we also know that from when I was a clerk, now this is going on 8, 9, 10 years ago, you reported the numbers every week. But only one of them really counted. Only one of them went on the stake one, and that was the first Sunday. Well, everybody knows that the first Sunday is the Sunday when you have baby blessings and that sort of thing. So the hope always was that when the one that mattered came about, you'd have like a good baby blessing and get people in. And if you were attending a baby blessing, and let's say you went to your sacrament meeting and then you went to a baby blessing, you'd get double counted. So there's another reason the numbers might not always be that accurate.
Well, and let's face it, fast and testimony meeting is probably the most interesting one of the month.
You know? I don't know about that, but
that's the worst one for
me. If you've been to my ward recently, you would reach that conclusion without much difficulty.
You know, Al, I was a believer, I hated it, and when I became a non-believer, I love it. It's probably a matter of perspective.
Perhaps. And I don't mean to denigrate the membership total. It's probably high, but it is a very difficult problem to figure out actual affiliation. I mean, as we know from countries that do their own census that has self-reported religious affiliation, you know, there's a disconnect between the number of members that the church thinks they have and the number of citizens in that country who think they are members of the church. So even though somebody was baptized, they may no longer consider themselves members of the church. And really, in voluntary association with an organization like the church, you know, isn't that sufficient to say, I'm no longer a member? Does that decision of mine, whether it be private or public, have to be reflected in the church's database?
So here's a question I have for you, because this is probably the most hotly debated that I've seen thing that goes on out in the blogger knackle and on the forums and stuff is reported numbers versus numbers of people who are actually butts in seat. In the years that you have been doing this, has anybody produced a methodology that is statistically valid that would make a good assumption and come up with some valid numbers that would show butts in seat as compared to the total membership numbers as reported by the church?
Well, recognize that the charts that I'm doing are based on reported numbers in conference. So, yeah, there may well be some things that you can do with supplementary figures that you find from some other source, but where you're just dealing with what's officially reported over the pulpit, you know, you have to make some assumptions that are based on things that are not reported over the pulpit.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm asking, though. Have you seen anybody in the years that you've been doing this do one of those types of projections that actually looked like it was that it was done with a valid rationale and a valid methodology to it.
I'm not sure there's just any purchase, any place you can put that grappling hook to really get to a rigorously better number.
Okay.
All such things are going to be fairly squishy, I think.
Okay, that makes sense, because what you're saying then is that it would be very, very difficult to come up with a statistically valid number as compared with the officially released number to come up and say it's 50% or it's 40% or something like that.
Right. Well, and recognize, okay, even if we had access to that first Sunday of the month number that's reported up, and somebody could total those and show what proportion of the total membership is actually in the seats the first Sunday of every month. That includes non-members, you know. That includes people who are visiting, who are, and like John says, perhaps double counted. You know, that's it may be an upper limit on the actual maybe not even upper limit, though, if you consider that any given week, you know, people who are active are just going to accidentally not be there for one reason or another. But it's a neighborhood for what the actual active membership of the church ought to be. But we don't have that number.
Awesome. Thanks.
So do you know that when they announce the total membership, is that record numbers? Is like whoever has a membership number, that's the number? Or is it what's counted from the word clerks? Or do you even know?
Yeah, I think that's a database number. I don't think that's an attendance number.
Yeah,
I think they have a database of members, and in fact there was an interview that Merrill Bateman gave to a reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune back in 2005, where he said some things about statistics that I don't think were on the record before that interview. One of them was that there's, you know, we know that the church loses track of people because people move out and you can't find them. They disappear. They maybe intentionally disappear. Maybe they just negligently disappear. But the church doesn't know where all the people on its database are. So there is a decent sized file of people that Elder Bateman referred to as in transit, and they can remain in transit for a long time. And one of the things that he mentioned that kind of surprised me when I first heard it was that they keep those people in that in transit file until 110 years after their birth, just to give the church every possible chance of catching up with them while they're still alive. It's only at 110 that a person is actually lost and presumed dead. So there are certainly some phantom members in the total that are dead people they've lost track of, and not enough time has elapsed to expire their membership.
Isn't that where John and Zilpha land?
No, they know where we are. We have home teachers and everything. So we are counted as part of that number.
You're in the total, but you're not in the in-transit total. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We're not in transit. They know where we are. But I do want to point out that just from this podcast, Niall and Jim are both still members. So
yeah,
we're all counted as
part
of that.
Niall is?
Yeah, he never resigned.
That blows me away. I thought he was gone.
I don't think so. So I mean, it's been very contentious among people who care, I guess, because the numbers are clearly off by a huge factor of people who would self-identify as LDS. It was a few years ago, maybe Alf, you can speak to this, where there was a study out of South America where they did, was it Mexico? I can't remember, but
there was a Mexican one. I think there was also one for Chile.
They had the actual census counts of people who self-reported.
Right.
The interesting thing in comparison was other faiths, like I remember the Jehovah's Witness and some others, their numbers were very, very close to what they self-reported. And I know in the United States census, the last census in 2000, I guess we'll have another one coming up here in a while, a lot of the Protestant religions were very close to what they self-reported, but the census numbers for the LDS church tend to be off drastically.
Well, I mean, we know what anybody who's been on a mission or been around missionaries knows just how eager they are to get people baptized. And there are a lot of people who get baptized quickly and then quickly go in transit. That's what you would expect. If you have a higher, higher barriers to entry. Like, I understand the Jehovah's Witnesses do. They have like a long period of study, and then you have to commit to some real heavy behavioral standards. That's going to keep things fairly close, I would think.
And I know a lot of religions, it's well known. I kind of attend the Unitarian Church. That they'll purge
that church in quotes, air quotes, right?
Well, you know, for the Unitarian, some of them refuse to call themselves churches. Mine's actually a fellowship because they don't like to be called a church. But they will, if you don't show up in a few years, they'll just kick you off the rolls. So they don't bother carrying them. And actually, I know several. I can think of some good friends of ours who are nearby who left the church, who actually resigned. And part of the reason they resigned was they didn't want the local ward to carry the burden of having to carry them on the rolls and assign them visiting teachers and home teachers. Not they didn't want or care for people to visit them, but they knew that there was an overhead cost for the ward in carrying those memberships.
That's thoughtful.
Well, I've heard that from many people that say they resign. They say that one of the biggest factors is they want to be left alone, and if you're not, you don't get to be left alone until you're actually away or your memberships are taken away from the church. Is that, I guess that's
not
correct.
Even then always, right?
Yeah, not even then. Yeah, I guess if John's got home teachers, see, if he doesn't want home teachers, he's got to pull the trigger.
Well, the family's the X factor, you know. You can resign from the church, but very few people successfully resign from a family or want to, you know. So
right.
You're still going to have a connection.
The church also, I've encountered these guys a couple times. I encountered them as a missionary, and I count them as a ward clerk. They have an office in downtown Salt Lake that just tracks down lost members.
Yep.
So as missionaries, we got like referrals from these guys that would say, go to this address and see if they're still there. And if they're not there, ask them if they know and things like that. And we'd get the same thing as a ward clerk. The church would say, this person is the cousin to, you know, Nathan, go ask them if they know what Nathan's contact address is. So the church actively tracks you down. But I have to say, BYU Alumni Association is much more aggressive. They've tracked them a lot faster than the church ever has.
They are pretty efficient. That's true. I've noticed that too.
All right. So enough of that nonsense. So let's talk about some of the fun numbers. Now, I in your reports, it looks like 99 was a pivotal year in that growth on all fronts sort of slowed down in 99.
That's probably true. Let me pull back up. There's a one of the charts I have is increase in membership by percent. So that is trending downward. Toward the left side in the 70s, you have annual growth rates of somewhere usually between 4 and 5, sometimes over 6%, but usually somewhere in the 4 to 5% range annually. And that's up through, actually, even through the mid to late 80s. Then 90 and 92 are off the charts. 1990 was 8.5% growth, and these numbers are diagonal. I may be misreading that. I think 1989 was the 8.5, and then 1990 was over 6%. Both of those sticking way out, big tall weeds from the lawn. My guess, since those numbers don't add up when you factor in increase in children of record and convert baptisms that year, I think that was a year that they adjusted the accounting in some way. Perhaps that was when they introduced the 110-year rule for the in-transit file.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely in variance with the rest of the numbers. It's an outlier.
Right. So if you whack those off, you know, you can see it then starting to slow down a little bit in the 90s. It's between 3 and 4% for the most part. In 99, it dipped under 3%, recovered in 2000 to almost 4%. But then since 2001, it hasn't crossed 3% any year.
So
it's been between 2 and 3% for the last decade, pretty much.
So to put that in more
the lower end of that range, really.
Oh, sorry. To put that in more layman's terms, that means that the number of members that it costs to get a new member, it's taking more and more members per new member.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at converts per 1,000 members, which is another chart I have somewhere, yeah, it's even more obvious, the steadily downward curve from the late 80s through the late aughts.
And that might be just a carrying cost of those members that we talked about. Those guys get baptized by the missionaries when they're 11. By 12, they're off to the wide world. They never hear about Mormons again. And then for the next, 98 years, they're counted on the rolls. And that's bringing this number down. For example, if the church were to cut all those names off the roll, their increased statistics might look a lot better.
Yep.
So I have a question about the increases and the kind of the flat space, because I was noticing on the first two charts, the number of stakes, the number of missions, it seems like between 90 to 95 for missions and then 94 to 99 for the number of stakes, we have outline huge level of growth in that area. But that also coincides. Right. That's also the exact same time when you're saying that as a percent increase year over year, we dropped down to the 2% range, or we were in the 4%. No, we dropped from we were at the 4%, 3% range. And then is there a correlation between those two? Because I'm trying to figure out why we had faster growth in stakes and missions at a time when increase in membership percentage was starting to drop.
Well, let's back up one level too, and say that probably your growth of units is a better indication of the actual growth rate of the active membership of the church, because you have to have so many tithe paying, Melchizedek priesthood holding, temple attending families in an area to have one of these units created or divided.
Yeah, good point.
So if you use the total membership and compare it to the to these unit growths, that will probably give you a little better idea of what the actual increase is. And those are still increasing. There's no doubt about it. But the growth rate is slowing, and you can see that from a couple of my charts are members per ward or branch and members per stake or district. Those are going up from the late 90s through the present. It's steadily more members per each of those units. So that indicates, once again, that we're carrying a lot of non-contributing members in that total membership number.
So you say that the growth is steadily not growing as fast. I guess it's shrinking, I guess, right?
It's not shrinking.
The growth rate is getting smaller. They're still growing, but the growth rate percentage is not getting bigger, right?
On average, yes. Although there are local variances from one year to another. So, like in the in 2004, it was a growth rate of about 2.5%. It went down slightly in 2005, but it was back up to about 2004 numbers in 2006. So, there's minor. When you look at the absolute numbers, it looks like just a steady line upward. When you look at the chart that says what the rate of growth is, then you can see there are variations. And we're kind of in a plateau. I can't say that it's slowing or accelerating particularly in the last, say, 7 or 8 years. It's kind of just bubbling there at a 2 to 2.5% growth rate annually.
So if we're at a sorry, John.
No, go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, so if we're in a plateau, Alf, I mean, and I'm sure you've thought about this, and it's obviously not in any of your statistics or your charts or anything like that. Do you see in the future, 5, 10, 20 years, that that plateau starts to steadily decline? Do you think that's what this kind of a trend is?
Well, you can make any number of assumptions and come up with any number of conclusions based on those assumptions. There was a rather famous prediction from a guy named Rodney Stark. I think he was studying the growth rate of the church in the 80s and published some articles and an entire book, I think, called The Rise of Mormonism. And he was looking at historical figures on growth rates by decade, basically. Here's how quickly we grow per decade. And he gave two rather famous projections, a low end and a high end, for the church in 2080, 100 years from when he started looking at it. And so he projected that on the basis of a 30% annual growth rate, or not annual, but decennial growth rate, every 10 years, 30% growth rate, that by 2080, we would get to 63 million members. And a 50% this annual growth rate would get us to 267 million members. And so that second number, the 267 million, is the one that gets reported most. And on the basis of that, he poses the question, are we seeing the arrival of a new world religion? Because when you start to get 250 million people in the world, that is major world religion time. I don't think we're going to see the upper end of that range. Over the last 10 years, it was about a 28.5% growth rate, which is still pretty close to his bottom end, slightly under that. But, you know, these things don't behave linearly. That's why I'm only comfortable projecting the next year.
So you're not comfortable enough in giving an assumption of 5, 10, 20 years from now?
I mean, I have made some projections, just fiddling with numbers to see what different assumptions yield. Like if you take the last 5 years, project them linearly to 2080, you get 35 million members. If you fit a parabolic curve to the last 5 years, you get it actually right about the same as it is now. 13.9 million is what it projects for 2080.
Really?
An exponential curve fitted brings you up in the 76 million range. So those are wildly off, practically useless, as far as I can tell.
Hmm. Okay.
I'm comfortable saying that in the next 10 years, you know, we're not going to double.
Sure.
But it will probably be under 30% growth over the next 10 years. Probably bringing us close to 16 million, maybe. I don't know. Not 16, 17 million over the next 10 years. It's not going to be pushing 30 million. At some point I don't speak as an expert on this by any means, but as I understand population growth dynamics, you know, when you are a really small group compared to the environment you're in, you can do all kinds of wacky things early in that growth rate. Once you start to become big enough to reach what I think they call the carrying capacity of the environment, you have to reach an equilibrium. You can't continue growing indefinitely. You know, rabbits can't multiply indefinitely. You know, they will reach an equilibrium with the environment, and you know, predators and food supply will determine what they can do. I think the church will probably at some point reach an equilibrium with the cultures in which it's implanted. I don't know how close we are to that, but
some that argue that we've already reached that in the United States. When you look at United States growth figures, they kind of track the general population growth in the United States, which you could conclude. I don't know. There's enough data to say it's reached its carrying capacity for the United States, and now it's just basically standing still because, you know, Mormons are having children, and so are everybody else. So there's going to be some growth.
Yeah, and let me mention one thing about children of record and convert baptism. So far, or at least in recent times, the convert baptisms have been about three times the number of children, the increase of children of record every year. So that component is about 3-1. We're still worldwide getting the biggest chunk of our growth through convert baptisms. At some point, if we are close to equilibrium, then we will that will change, and most of our growth will come from organic growth, from births to families within the church.
So I have a question about your trending. When you've done your trending, you've basically used the years since 1973 to predict kind of what's going off in the future, right?
Right.
Have you done any trending on this thing that kind of looks at it from just like starting from 2000? Moving forward, because a lot of people have postulated with a theory that says since the advent of the internet, church growth is starting to slow. And it'd be interesting if you took off the years between 73 and 2000-ish, what the trend lines would look like at that point.
Well, I guess I misspoke a little bit. I don't usually use those early years in my trending. I do stick to recent years when I'm projecting something.
Okay.
When I'm projecting what's going to happen next year, I look at the previous 5 years. I have them all on the charts all the way back to 73, and that's just by convenience because online, when you look up conference reports, that's the earliest year you can get from the LDS website. There are earlier numbers available. I haven't dug them out and incorporated them, but just for convenience, In the era of correlation, these are the numbers.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'd be suspicious of anything that starts from 1973 and projects all the way up to here, because these are disparate eras in the history of the church.
Yes, that's true. Now, one of the interesting numbers has to do with the missionaries, the number of missionaries, which we saw take a big dip in about, 2005. There was a growth trend that went up, and then, like everything else, it starts slowing and peaked about around 2003 or so, then dipped way down, went on a two-year trend, and it's been holding a little bit level. They're all like pre-1996 or 1997 numbers right now.
That was the raise the bar year.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Go ahead.
if you go to that thread on MAD, the story will take an interesting twist, because that was my contention. In 2002, actually, you see the peak year for missionary totals, just over 60,000. It drops to 55 something in 2003, and then down to just over 50,000 in 2004. So two straight years, it took a precipitous drop. And I said, well, that's just got to be changing the standards of admission to the missionary force. And because when I look backwards to birth rates, I didn't see the big dip. Turns out I just don't do arithmetic very well, because I was going from the present day, not from 2003. If you look back in 1983, 84, those were peak years for births in the church. 120,000, what was the category that year? Increase in children of record in 82 and 83. Then under 100,000. In 84. It was a precipitous drop. I don't know what accounts for that. That's probably one of the more interesting numbers, is that the birth rate suddenly dropped by like over 15% in 1 year. And I think that the echo of that is what we're seeing in the missionary numbers in 2003.
And Bateman, in that interview you referred to earlier, claimed that he said that it was something the church had anticipated. I believe that trough is accounted for by the baby boomers and the changing between those generations. So those kids born before about 80 were, you know, the first generation of kids born to the baby boom. So if you were to look at population growth cycles in the United States, you'd see peaks and valleys following those generations as one bigger generation changes off. So
I have a little bit of a hard time with that. I was Elders Quorum president when the whole raise the bar thing went in. And I remember over the subsequent year or two, I had to deal with probably twice as many 20-year-old elders than we had ever had before. Because at least in my ward, and the way that was implemented in my stake, they came out and said, you know, you're masturbating, you're not going. You've been with a girl one time, you're not going. And it was a dramatic drop in the number of missionaries that we saw going out from our stake, and a dramatic increase in the number of 19, 20, 21-year-old guys we had hanging around in the wards and in the singles wards and for us to deal with. So just from personal experience, I saw an effect with that program going in. But you're saying statistically there's other reasons for it?
Well, it's actually pretty predictable. If you look at the drop in birth rate, you see it echoed pretty neatly in the drop in missionaries.
Yeah, I agree. Your birth rate argument is a very solid one, because that would follow through easily.
I wouldn't be surprised if raising the bar effort contributed something to it, but I'm sure it's swamped by the demographic contribution.
See, I still think that raising the bar is just a cover story. I don't buy it. I would think that, you know, when I was a kid, getting like a porno magazine was a chore. You had to go through all sorts of hoops. You know, so if you're talking about like a pornography addiction, that's going to be so much more prevalent today than it would have been, say, 20 years ago.
But all they really need is a Sears catalog, bro.
Oh, Victoria's Secret.
Okay.
I don't want to hear you guys in your
go ahead. Sorry.
So I don't know. I haven't seen any personally. I think raising the bar is just a cover story. That's my story I'm sticking
with. Well, the only thing that makes me wonder is because the raising the bar thing, and then there's that drop in active missionaries. But you'd think, since the missionaries are that much more valiant, and you'd think the convert to baptisms would have jumped up too. Less missionaries, but more convert baptisms.
Yeah, talk about...
Well, there is, I do have a chart for converts per missionary. And they bottomed out right about 2003, but they've been increasing since, slightly, and they're still fairly lower than historic averages. I have 5 converts per missionary in 2008.
That's worldwide, that's, or church-wide or whatever?
That's based on dividing the convert baptisms reported in the statistical report by the number of missionaries reported at this in the same report. So it's just pretty straightforward. So yeah, it took from about 4.25 up to 5. It took that little increase over the last 5 years. So there may be something to the raising the bar, increasing the effectiveness of missionaries. But the number of missionaries has been fairly steady since that drop. It's very little bit, but there's not a big trend one way or another. So that also mirrors more or less the demographics. If the raising the bar was going to continue to erode the missionary force, it did its damage early on and probably is no longer a factor in the ongoing numbers.
Except we're falling into the fallacy of assuming those are all young men and young women missionaries. And if you recall, in the early part of the 2000s, there was a big push for elder couple missionaries. And that number is not broken down to just say that, the single young men on the mission.
It is full-time missionaries. You're right. So, yeah, there's probably, maybe we're projecting more than is warranted from those numbers.
And I've heard stories from my parents that there's people in their state who are serving full-time missions who live at home and then drive down to Salt Lake every day, 40 hours a week. So there is a real probability here that the church has sort of played fast with that number, where if you were looking at the number from 1982... that would be largely the standard proselyting missionary, and now there's probably a lot more wiggle room in that definition.
I didn't come into this podcast very cynical, John. What are you trying to do here?
So are there numbers that break down, like, how many sister missionaries to male missionaries? No. To elders? No?
They don't. Not in general conference. If they're elsewhere, I haven't found them. I haven't looked too hard either, but
okay.
I'd like to see the breakdown of hot sister missionaries to the other kind, because the more of those you get, the more they're on Temple Square. And last time I was there were a whole bunch of them. So I would assume that the overall beauty rate of the female missionaries...
You'd want to incorporate the map into that chart, wouldn't you? Show cluster.
Do an overlay of stats? Is that what... you're tight. That's tight, John.
Yeah, last time Zilp and I were on Temple Square, I swear we got accosted by about 14 different sets of missionaries. You'd walk out one door and there was a set there, walk in another door, there's a set there, and man, it was a slow day on Temple Square. All right. So
I thought it was always a slow day on Temple Square.
Let's see, let me bring up the chart. There's another one here that's sort of interesting looking that I probably need you to explain to me. Membership growth rate minus stake growth rate, because this is above the line and below the line sometimes.
What? Yeah, because stakes and total membership grow at slightly different rates. Some years the stakes are growing faster than the membership is, and some years the membership's growing faster than the stakes are. So this is meant to capture their relative on any given year their relative speed of growth. So off to the left, you see negative numbers where the membership is growing faster than the stakes. Is that right? No, membership minus. So that would be stakes are growing faster than the members. And that's from the mid-70s through the early 80s. Then we have a period of the 80s through early 90s where the membership was growing much faster than the stakes. And that anomalous year of 1989 sticks way out the top. I think that's a record-keeping artifact, not actual organic growth. Then for a period in the late 90s, the stakes were kind of on a tear, and we saw that in the stake chart where it was kind of steep in that period. And then over the last 10 years or so, it's been the the stakes have been growing about 2% slower than the total membership. 1 to 2% slower.
Now, I know where I live here in North Carolina. We have stakes and wards. If I understand correctly, our stake has 4 wards in a branch. When I was growing up, our stake had 10 wards and then went to 12. And those were full, bursting at the seam wards up there in Roy, Utah. And I know that when I go to the priesthood session, I did kind of a head count last time of the stake. There was about 45 of us there. I asked my home teachers how many people come to church generally, and they said about 150. So I think a lot of the stakes out here in the mission field might be a little bit smaller than those at Zion. Let's compare those to your numbers, Tom. You're right there in Utah County. What is your
like? Actually, it's about the same. It seems like when our ward clerk would take the numbers, it would sacrament attendance would usually go between 100 to 200, usually never above that. I mean, except for those first fast and testimony meetings with the baby blessings, then it might get to 300. But usually we don't have to open the overflow, but yeah.
But your ward is fully staffed? There's a certain number of people you have to have to run a stake. You know, if you're going to have a stake, you have to have the stake presidency, you have to have a high council, you have to have the bishoprics.
Yeah, it's fully staffed, sure. Yeah, I mean, there's some that are doing a little bit of double duty, but yeah, it's fully staffed. This is the heart of Zion, bro. Of course, we're running like a well-oiled machine.
I thought you had it where there was like 4 people with the same calling and you'd rotate it through. Isn't that how Utah is nowadays? You have 4 beehive teachers and 4 teachers quorum advisors, and I'm just giving you grief. I grew up there. You got to give me some. I know the place.
Tom's new calling. He's a greeter. He's the greeter at the door, which is a promotion from his old calling, which was the hymn book collector.
Which was great, except for you'd run into the animal crackers all the time. So what about the shrinking missions? Because I noticed in this last conference they talked about missions that they were done away with, and they did away with my mission. I was very disappointed.
I think there's some creation and some consolidation going on at the same time. Since the late 90s, there's been only a fairly slight increase of total missions. We're somewhere in the 330 range up to almost 350 now. Before that, you know, from the early 70s on up through the late 90s, there was a fairly steady increase from just over 100 missions to over 300 missions. So, you know, that's pretty visible on the missions chart. Steady growth for 20 years, fairly slight growth for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and now they have young men and young women who are called to non-proselyting missions. That was unheard of, 20 years ago when I was out. There were couples that were called on service missions, but never young people.
Well, and missions may be the place where we start to see the church's equilibrium with its environment earliest, because the missions really are worldwide. And in the in the early 90s, we had a sudden opening of lands that we had never thought would be available for proselytizing. There are still quite a few lands still closed, but it doesn't look likely that we're going to be able to enter those anytime soon. So it may be that the church reaches an equilibrium of number of missions it can have in the world and profitably proselytize there.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about the flip side numbers. Grant Palmer, in his book, famously said that he heard from Salt Lake City that there were upwards of 100,000 people resigning from the church each year. You've all heard that statistic?
Yeah.
So in the past 5 or 6 years, I've been keeping my eye on that number. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I said Grant Palmer was off by a factor of 10.
That sounds right to me.
I am now ready to go on record saying that he is off by a factor of 25. I would be surprised to learn that there's more than 2,000 people a year actually resigning from the church.
2,000 a year, huh?
2,000.
What are you basing it on? What's making you go with that?
I'm basing that on my own experience, you know, organizing and contacting ex-Mormons both here on the East Coast. And when I did that back in Davis County in Salt Lake City, My experience after having met many, many ex-Mormons is that most of them have not actually become ex-Mormons. Most of them have not resigned. It's probably, I would guess, 1 in 3 of people who self-identify as ex-Mormons and might frequent the message boards or go to the Calm meetings or the ex-Mormon conferences. Only about 1 in 3 have actually resigned. I think it's just much more common for people just to, you know, quit going to church.
So what about the rumor that you hear about, is it Greg Dodge, is that his name, that his staff has had to increase from just him doing filings to, now he has to have a staff of 5 or 6 and they're madly working all day long to do it?
Strengthening the membership committee, yeah.
Well, that's not, yeah. That's not Dodge.
No, that's not the same thing.
That's not the same thing?
No. Oh. No, strengthening the membership committee actually exists. We'll have to talk about this in another podcast. They are the church's clipping service, and they keep track of notable naughty Mormons.
So they have a whole hard drive devoted to Mormon Expression podcasts, right?
So who's the group then that on Flack all the time, you see all the instructions of who to send your letter to? And I thought it was always listed this Dodge guy.
It is. He has. I can't remember the name of the office, but they are the office that processes, like the resignations, and I assume they process excommunications and reinstatements. You know, if you've been excommunicated, you need to get reinstated through the first residency. I would just naturally assume that office handles that. But you know, in terms of paperwork, you know, let's say there were 300 people resigning every year, and each one took a half hour to process. You know, you still got to have a staff there to deal with that. So I don't think the fact that there's 3 or 4 people working in that office, and I don't think any of the ex-Mormons really know, I don't think that pretends to 100,000 resignations.
You know, I just don't see where there's room. When you have the officially reported numbers, total members, increase in children of record, and convert baptisms, there's a gap there where you can have deaths and statistical adjustments, but also people leaving of their own accord. There's just not enough daylight between those categories year to year to sustain those kind of numbers. Right. They have to be they have to be 5 figures or 4 figures or less is the way I see it.
Well, this is my opinion again. I think that naturally, for as long as the church has been around, there's a huge attrition rate of people who just quit going. Some of those people come back, probably maybe a fifth. I think I read a church figure at one point that said, yeah, I did. It was in a sociological study of membership, and it said that 80% of members go to a period of, I think it was at least 6 months of inactivity sometime in their life. 80% of all members have been inactive at some point in their life, which is a huge number. So a lot of people drift out of the church and then circle back in. I would guess, even if you look on the angry boards, you know, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 of those people 10 years from now will be back in the church. That's just naturally what people do. I'm not trying to criticize anybody. I just think there's a lot of ties there, and we tend to return to what worked for us at one time in our life, even if it's something like alcohol, you know. So I think there's this huge number of people who just naturally leave the church for whatever reason. It doesn't work for them. And I think the people who are actively, you know, angrily sending in letters, I don't think statistically they're much different than what the church has always been dealing with.
I think what's interesting about looking at all these numbers that Alf's put together is it doesn't really confirm, you know, the Niles of the world that are hoping that the whole thing's burning and that it is on a steadily decline, because all they have to do is read Grant Palmer's book and they'll want out. But it also isn't confirming necessarily Mike's view that the church is also growing head over heels and all the other countries are opening up with open arms either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
if there are members who still believe that one of the signs of the times is an exponentially growing church, they're probably going to have to adjust their expectations over the next few years.
Well, and we saw in this last conference, I think the church has started to try to soften that blow with the membership and tried to make it clear. You know, there's people who will claim that the church not growing is a sign that it's the true church, because, you know, the true church is always small in numbers, they'll claim. And there's people who claim that growth is a sign of... I don't think growth or lack thereof will hurt anybody's testimony.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Everybody will just take it and say, that's what it is. It is what it is. And they'll either find justification to make themselves feel better if it goes up, or they'll find things to make themselves feel good if it stays the same or goes down. I think it's a thing that they can't alter. And so faith will help them out when no matter what happens.
And if you just look at the total membership number, you know, that's going to be the one that most people, if they remember any of the numbers from the Saturday session where they announced them, it'll be that number. It was 13.8 million this last year. Yep. And that's going to continue to increase for the foreseeable, as far as I can see. I don't see the beginnings of a plateau for that yet. I don't see that number flattening. I see it slowing down, but that's still continuing to increase. And that's what people are going to remember. We're going to cross 14 million probably the next time around, and people are going to chalk that up, and they'll look back at their childhood. I remember when we only had 4 million people. And that's the parallax that they will apply to that number.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't think, you know, my prediction for next year, we can go around the table here. I think your trends will continue. I think the rate of growth will continue to decline, will hover somewhere just below 2%. And then we'll see a slow, you know, isometropic leveling out of the membership, and it'll kind of track overall U.S. population growth. That's my prediction.
Really quick question for you before we go on with predictions. Like, I don't know if I disagree with any of that. With your stats going only back to 1973, does it follow the same linear up and to the right if you went back to, you know, the 1800s or the early 20s or anything like that? I mean, is there any numbers that go back decades, many decades?
Well, yeah, there are numbers. The Rodney Stark book that I referred to has a chart by decade going back to 1830, starting with he estimates 280 members in 1830, 16,000 members in 1840. So that's by far the biggest leap in membership we had any year. The first million was crossed somewhere between 1940 and 1950, but he also on the same table has rate of increase, and the decennial rate of increase has been historically somewhere between 18% and 73%. It's really all over the map. Some decades there was 50% growth, some were in the 20s, and so that's why he used 30 and 50 as his bracketing numbers. But 28.5% was what I calculated for the most recent 10 years. So we're a little below that bracket now.
All right. Any of you have predictions?
I agree with Alf's trend predictions. I think the church growth rate will continue to slow down. It won't stop, but it'll... You know, I do think that we'll crest that 14 million mark, and there'll be a lot of cheering. But I think if they could just go a little bit easier on raising the bar and get a little bit of Sears catalogs out of some of these young men homes, that might make things a little bit easier to get missionaries in.
It's the internet they have to watch out for.
The internet, yeah.
Yeah, because you never know what those things will do. So I my prediction would be, yeah, I think they're going to top 14. I think it'll continue to just follow worldwide population trends, and until you see a change in birth rate happen in larger numbers, you know, a positive or negative, I think you're just going to see this continue to see it grow up and to the right. And like you said earlier, mostly organic growth. So... Yeah, I would agree. It would be interesting to take a poll and maybe do a vote online to see who thinks it will jump over 14 at the next conference report, or whether it would wait until the time after that.
I'm going to say over, and furthermore, I'm going to predict that the auditing report will show that all tithes have been dispersed within the guidelines set up.
Two great predictions. Let's get them down on paper.
How about this, Alf? Of all the numbers you see, what are some of the numbers you wish that you could see? Would it be tithing dollars? I mean, what are some of the numbers you wish that they would disclose?
Oh, my. I guess I'd like to see more detailed breakdown of all the numbers, you know, rather than see aggregate totals, I'd like to see things by ages, by regions. You know, I'd like to see exactly how many are in the in-transit file. Maybe that's my number one. How many members are in that total for whom we do not have an address?
Spoken like a true statistician. He has a chance to get worldwide tithing increase, and instead what he wants is a statistic to compare against existing data.
That's all I'm interested in.
All right, guys. As always, the discussion continues on the webpage, where you can also see these fascinating statistical charts. You can send us an email at mail@mormonexpression.com. The website is, of course, mormonexpression.com. And you can call us at 801-906-6722.
John, every time I come on, I never intend to talk about masturbation, and somehow it makes it in every time. I've never brought it up any of the three times, just putting that on the record.